Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Geopolitical Report for May 6th, 2024. I'm Phil Adler. As the conflict in Gaza and the protests command our attention, a better understanding of the deep divisions in the Middle East might increase our confidence as we make key investment decisions. Confluence Associate Market Strategist Daniel Ortworth joins us today to help us gain perspective. Daniel, you've titled this week's report, Middle East, Land of Fault Lines. A fault line implies much more than just a serious disagreement, right?
That's right, Phil. Let's consider a little comparison. A geological fault line is not just some crack in the ground. It is a place where two opposing geological forces are arrayed against each other, pressing against each other. When will the opposition of those forces cause an earthquake? Will they ever cause an earthquake? When they do, will it be a small tremor, or maybe a series of small tremors? Or will it be a truly earth-shaking, destructive event that is felt well beyond its region? In our use of the term, the same questions apply, except that now we are talking about two opposing geopolitical forces arrayed and pressing against each other. Sure, a serious disagreement lies at the heart of the matter, but just as in the case of geology, a geopolitical fault line has the potential to erupt into open conflict at any time and at any level of force.
Daniel, I want to return to this concept of fault lines when we discuss investment implications later. But first, was it difficult for you to summarize some of these conflicts without implying a right or wrong position?
Phil, it was extremely difficult. The Middle East is home to the oldest civilizations in recorded human history. The people and cultures of the region have very understandable claims and interests that overlap over the course of thousands of years, and there are many points of view. At Confluence, we have no intention of taking sides on any of these issues. We only want to help the investor understand the implications of the issues and their combined complexity. With this report, we are trying our best to simply describe a picture.
Well, let's begin considering some of these Middle East fault lines, several of which might not be as readily evident to U.S. investors as others. First, rival nationalities, which extend back centuries. Which are the major ones?
Well, dozens of different and distinct nationalities call the Middle East home, but three in particular have played dominant roles since ancient times. They are the Arabs, Persians, and Turks. Since the fall of Rome, 14 different empires have laid claim to parts of the Middle East, and most of these empires were of Arab, Persian, or Turkic national origin. Those three national and cultural identities remain prominent in the Middle East today, most directly represented by the states of Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Turkey.
And then there are the religious rivalries. The Israeli-Arab conflict is very obvious to us, but the division within the Muslim faith has been present for centuries. How's that playing out today?
Of the nearly 500 million people who live in the Middle East, approximately 85% adhere to Islam. The two main traditions of Islam are Sunni and Shia. In the Middle East, an estimated two-thirds of the Islamic population follow the Sunni tradition, while one-third follows the Shia tradition. This religious divide has endured for 14 centuries and represents a fundamental disagreement among Muslims concerning core elements of the faith. Although Sunni and Shia typically live peacefully together, the divide occasionally inspires strife and sectarian conflict. Unfortunately, this type of conflict has been on the rise in the 21st century. Furthermore, since Persian Iran and Arab Saudi Arabia are generally viewed as the standard bearers for Shia and Sunni Islam, the current rivalry between these two states represents an intersection of two ancient and sometimes volatile fault lines.
Daniel, when Great Britain and France carved up Middle Eastern territories during World War I, boundary lines defining new countries did not always recognize different nationalities. How has this complicated the politics of the region?
That carving up called the Sykes-Picot Agreement after its two main negotiators, divided parts of the collapsing Ottoman Empire, which was a Turkic empire, by the way, according to the economic interests that the European powers had in those lands. The boundaries drawn between the areas of interest went directly through the homelands of various national, cultural, and religious groups, leaving them fractured by artificial borders. When the European powers eventually relinquished control and retreated, these artificial divisions became the borders between the newly independent countries of Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, Israel, and the Palestinian territories. This has led to conflicts among the countries and sectarian violence within them, involving population groups who consider themselves underrepresented, disenfranchised, or betrayed by the original agreement.
There seem to be a lot of these fault lines. What newer fault lines did Cold War politics create in the Middle East?
Well, let's picture the scene as it was in the late 1940s. World War II had just ended, and the reality of the emerging Cold War was just beginning to take shape. The United States and the Soviet Union found themselves scrambling in every region throughout the world to develop alliances to counterbalance each other in a global geopolitical competition. Pre-existing local issues and alliances didn't matter anymore, and the Middle East was no exception. Turkey became a member of NATO, whereas it had been a wartime ally of Germany, and Syria became a regional ally of the Soviet Union, whereas it had been part of the pre-war French mandate. Throughout the Cold War, Turkey and Syria played key roles in their partnerships with the US and USSR, including hosting air and naval bases for their respective patrons. The Cold War may have ended 33 years ago, yet these relationships remain strong. Turkey's Incirlik Air Base has served a vital role in U.S. air operations in the region since 9/11, and Syria's Tartus naval base serves as Russia's base of operations in the Mediterranean Sea. As the U.S. and Russia have taken opposing positions on a range of issues within the region, such as the Syrian civil war and combating ISIS, this fault line has continued to cause tremors.
Daniel, has the failure to resolve the issue of Palestinian statehood deepened existing fault lines or created new ones?
Well, Phil, it really has done both. It is now nearly 80 years since the first two-state solution was crafted, proposed, and approved by the UN, though not without disapproval by several Arab states. Each conflict and attempt at resolution, and many attempts have been made over the decades, seems to have only deepened the divides among the original interested parties. Today, we also find new interested parties becoming directly involved in the conflict or indirectly supporting one side or another, politically, financially, and sometimes militarily. It is challenging to speak about the reasons for these new involvements without seeming to, as it were, take a side. So, for now, I will just leave it at that.
How about the war in Ukraine? Has it caused an existing fault line to extend well beyond the Middle East?
Indeed, Phil, it has. Both Iran and Turkey have become involved. Iran and Russia have an established and growing defense partnership, and now Iran has provided Russia thousands of drones that have been used over the Ukrainian battlefield. In return, Russia is providing Iran advanced aviation assets, to include helicopters and fighter aircraft. Meanwhile, a new defense partnership is forming between Turkey and Ukraine, and it also involves advanced drones. In fact, the two countries are now collaborating on a new drone design involving a Ukrainian engine and Turkish airframe. They call it a Turkish bird with a Ukrainian heart. We would be naive to view these relationships as simple economic opportunities or initiatives to extend influence outside of the Middle East. As indicated earlier, the Turkic-Persian rivalry, represented today by competition for influence between Turkey and Iran, is as ancient as it is intensifying in the modern environment. By playing meaningful roles in the big earthquake next door, these two Middle Eastern powers are working to gain leverage against each other in their ancient rivalry.
Well, Daniel, let's turn to investments. The very concept of fault lines suggests that these deep divisions won't be resolved, or at least not anytime soon. How does this inform investment strategy?
Unfortunately, Phil, it probably means that investors need to think in terms of a permanent state of tension and conflict at some level in the Middle East. We surely don't want that, and we hope for success in the effort to forge peace in the region. However, as persistent as the pattern of conflict has been, and as enduring as these fault lines are, as investors, we simply must keep ourselves prepared. Just like with geology, we might go long periods without an earthquake, or we might have one tomorrow. I think it's safe to say that on the 6th of October last year, virtually no one in our investor community knew that militants from Gaza would storm into southern Israel the very next day and spark this current conflict. Israeli intelligence didn't see it coming. With a restive region such as this, we need to always be on our guard.
And what are the main investment recommendations that we might feel confident about?
Well, first, we need to expect transportation costs to remain high. The Middle East is a major crossroads for global trade, so conflict in the region carries the risk of one or more of the trade routes crisscrossing the region being impeded or outright closed. These costs find their way into so many of the things that we buy and the operating costs of the companies whose stocks we own. Next, we need to keep our eye on oil prices. Historically, Middle Eastern conflict has caused oil prices to rise or maybe even spike, since so much of the world's supply comes from the region. This time around, rather surprisingly, oil prices have remained in check. This is probably because of American shale production, which has provided a new source of alternative supply. Still, let's be cautious about that. There is probably a breaking point in the market, beyond which we would expect prices to rise as they have before. We just don't know where that breaking point is. We also suspect that this latest round of conflict is contributing to the rise in the price of gold as investors respond to the heightened risk by resorting to a traditional, as we call it, safe haven asset. Finally, we consider the situation in the Middle East to be another contributor to the continuing strengthening in defense stocks, especially European ones, since they are closer to the source of concern.
Daniel, all of these fault lines, and there seem to be an overwhelming number of them, they seem to present a persuasive case for these recommendations. That is, if the conflict continues to be contained, what's the possibility of an outbreak of a major, even a world war?
Well, Phil, that's really an impossible question to definitively answer, but I can say a few things to help. First, we do think that the present Gaza conflict will remain contained and that it will eventually end over the course of several more months. Of course, we are talking about armed conflict here, which is inherently very risky and unstable, so things could go a surprising direction. Second, and talking in a broader sense about the whole world, not just the Middle East, we do see a clear trend toward greater geopolitical tension along a number of axes. History shows that countries, especially great powers, strive to avoid war due to its costs and risks. However, wars do happen. We are not expecting or predicting major war, but we are saying that the risk is greater than it has been for quite a while. Finally, let's remember the message from our most recent report and podcast, The Changing Face of War. The ways that humans wage war have changed down through time, and today's technological advances are ushering in new capabilities for waging war. We might already be in a state of war and not even recognize it.
Daniel, one last question. Before the Hamas attack back in October, Israel and Saudi Arabia seemed to be making progress toward a friendlier relationship. Could this reemerge? And if so, could it help lead to greater stability in the Middle East that might redefine investment strategy?
Yes, Phil, it could, and I'm really glad that you asked. The reasons Israel and Saudi Arabia had for developing a better relationship with each other still exist, maybe more than ever. The Gaza conflict has produced a roadblock to progress, but we think that roadblock is temporary. In time, we expect them to find a way forward and for the improvement in relations to resume. Communication among powers is always a good thing. Among the reasons, it tends to breed stability. After all of the hard topics we have addressed together today, this is a very positive note on which to end.
Thank you, Daniel. We do remind our listeners that this discussion is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. This information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.